The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. An exciting time of year. We had our late-night senior dinner last evening at Cheel's in Henley, one of the nicest restaurants in the area. Another late night. I missed my news-gathering meeting today, telling the staff that, yes, all these end-of-the-year, end-of-the-school-year late nights, it's catching up with me, but we're coming into what we hope will be a restful weekend. So much, though, to dig into on today's program. Later on in the show, I'm going to go through a few verses, if I have time, from 1 Timothy. We covered that a few days ago and had to kind of hurry through it in class because we were running out of time there. But hopefully I can slow down a little bit for the tail end of this program and give you something to think on as you head into this Sabbath weekend. Well, as for the news, you look at the circus yesterday, to paraphrase William Jacobson's blog, something has definitely changed. It's a spectacle. In Congress, you have a congressman bringing in a bucket of fried chicken. They're mocking. It's worse than mocking. As you'll hear from this montage, they want to take out the attorney general. They want to destroy him. They want him in jail even. Listen to what Democrats were saying all day yesterday. Clip one.
Attorney General Barr's performance in yesterday's Judiciary Committee hearing was abysmal, raising all types of questions about his willingness to be a faithful steward of the law.
He lied to Congress. If anybody else did that, it would be considered a crime.
I think we should begin the proceedings to remove the attorney general. He is obstructing in real time right now. And
Chicken Barr should have shown up today and answered questions. This man was picked to be Roy Cohn and to be Donald Trump's fixer. The Black Sox look clean compared to this team.
This is a grave danger for American democracy. And then, if we don't get that, we will proceed to hold the Attorney General in contempt, and we'll go from there.
Attorney General Bill Barr is now one of the most dangerous men in Washington, D.C. We in Congress will rein him in. We will hold him accountable.
This Attorney General lacks all credibility and has, I think, compromised the American public's ability to believe that he is a purveyor of justice.
Should he resign?
Yes.
Those are reporters there at the end. Should he resign? Should he resign? Should we get rid of him? Should he go to jail? We'll address the reportage a little bit later in this segment. But why are their heads exploding? Why is this happening? What is going on here? You step back and look at some of the dates. It is amazing. There was a time all through last year, this investigation just seemed like it would never end. One of our listeners was saying that he thought the nomination was put forward by the president on December 7th, the nomination for William Barr. His hearings, his confirmation hearings, that was right around January 15th, 16th. He was then confirmed, I think, on February the 14th. And then within 6 weeks of his confirmation, the Mueller probe was over. The Mueller probe ended, finally. And then the new attorney general, he came out with his 4-page summary on the conclusions of the Mueller report. And wasn't that a disappointing day for the news media, for the Democrat media complex that had been pinning their hopes on Bob Mueller for 2 years? It was his report that was supposed to destroy Donald Trump. The four-page summary comes out a couple weeks after that. You have the full Mueller report, and as we've been seeing this week, the Democrats and their allies in the media, they don't really have anything to argue except for procedure. Well, but what about Bob Mueller's letter? Why didn't you tell us about this? Why did it take a few weeks before we saw the report? You heard some of what was going on earlier this week. The hearing on, I believe it was Wednesday. And then they're up in arms over the use of spying. Of course, that was from a previous hearing. And then it came up again as I played for you yesterday, Sheldon Whitehouse asking him about the use of the term spying. And the attorney general saying, I think it's a pretty good word. And, of course, at the previous hearing, he said, yes, spying, it was going on. This blogger, William Jacobson, he's a lawyer, I believe. He writes at Legal Insurrection. But he says here, what is going on? What is going on here? Why are they going after Barr with such ferocity? It has nothing to do with the Mueller report or the four-page summary or the timing of the release of the full report. It was Barr's comments. Listen to this. It was Barr's comments about spying on the Trump campaign and his pledge to investigate that spying that explains the frenzy to take down Barr. They want to take him down. To them, given what they've been doing for the past 3 years, he is dangerous because he's about to expose them. Jacobson says that spying, regardless of whether lawful, has the potential to be a scandal that could touch deep into the Obama administration. And some former officials who loom large in the anti-Trump resistance. There's a lot at stake here. And they're listening, as contentious as these hearings are. The Obama officials, the Democrat media complex, they're listening to what this attorney general is saying in his testimony. He said back on April 10th that he's going to be looking into this. Listen to some of these clips yet again, clip six.
I am going to be reviewing both the genesis and the conduct of intelligence activities directed at the Trump campaign during 2016.
The genesis and the conduct. I'm going to be digging into how all of this got started. And I'm going to look at the conduct of Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Andy McCabe, Jim Comey, and the rest. It was in that hearing, as I say, where he talked about spying. Here's clip seven.
I think spying on a political campaign is a big deal. It's a big deal.
That was controversial, the media told us. That was controversial because it was loaded, a loaded term. Spying. You might remember the congresswoman that said, well, you're not actually saying there was spying going on. And he said, well, yes, I am. There was. There was spying. It did occur. The New York Times at the time said, the remarks by the new attorney general, particularly his embrace of the term spying, which is frequently invoked by critics of the Russia investigation, are certain to please President Trump and his allies. See, it all gets down to politics, the way the New York Times sees it. Mr. Barr, he's not supposed to use the term spying. Radio talk show hosts, they can't use the term spying. Conservatives, they're not supposed to use the term spying. Of course, everyone on the other side, as I played for you yesterday, they use it routinely. They were admitting it even. Wiretapping, spying. But don't you dare accuse them of spying. And here comes this attorney general, as he said earlier this week. Well, I use that term. I use that term all the time. This week, again, he added more detail to some of the things that he's looking into. Here's clip 8.
Many people seem to assume that the only intelligence collection that occurred was a single confidential informant and a FISA warrant. I'd like to find out whether that is in fact true. It strikes me as a fairly anemic effort if that was the counterintelligence effort designed to stop the threat as it's being represented.
That's the Attorney General saying, most people are assuming here that there's the one informant, that's Stephen Halpert, had the conversation with Papadopoulos and also Carter Page, and then the FISA warrant. Many people assume that that's it. Well, actually, if that's all that happened, that seems like a fairly anemic effort given the charges at the time. Trump-Russia collusion. And so that's the new AG saying, I'm going to look and see if there's more to this. If there are more spies. If there were more warrants. Who knows what else he'll turn up. Who knows what else the Inspector General, Horowitz, what he's turning up right now. He's investigating into the FISA abuse. Mr. Barr went on to say this on Wednesday, clip 9.
Well, these are the things that I need to look at. And I have to say that, as I've said before, you know, the extent that there was any overreach, I believe it was a few people in the upper echelons of the Bureau and perhaps the Department. But those people are no longer there.
You think McCabe and Comey were listening to that? If there was overreach, it was in the upper echelon. Think of some of those players that are now gone. Brennan, Clapper, you can add them to the mix. There was a fascinating exchange with Senator Cornyn where he talked about how it all got started with the counterintelligence investigation into Russian meddling, Russian interference, and why this investigation, why it wasn't brought to the attention of the Trump campaign. Why didn't they, as fellow Americans, why didn't they approach Donald Trump and say, listen, we're getting these reports. You better check your staff. You better make sure all of your officials, all of your advisors, you better make sure that they're not being compromised. Here's a little bit of a longer clip, as I say. This is Senator Cornyn talking to William Barr earlier this week in the testimony. Clip 10.
What's a defensive briefing that in a counterintelligence investigation?
Well, you could have different kinds of defensive briefings. If you learn that somebody is being targeted by a hostile intelligence service, then one form of defensive briefing is to go and to alert that person to the risks.
I think Attorney General Lynch has said it is routine in counterintelligence investigations. Would you agree with her?
Yes.
Do you know whether a defensive briefing was ever given to the Trump campaign by the FBI based on their counterintelligence investigation? Did they ever tell the president before he was January 2017 what the Russians were trying to do and advise him to tell people affiliated with this campaign to be on their guard and be vigilant about Russian efforts to undermine public confidence in the election?
My understanding is that didn't happen.
That would be an that failure to provide a defensive briefing to the Trump campaign, that would be an extraordinary or notable failure. Would you agree?
I think under these circumstances, it's one of the things that I can't fathom why it did not happen. If you're concerned about interference in the election and you have, you know, substantial people involved in the campaign who were former U.S. attorneys, you had three former U.S. attorneys there, in the campaign. I don't understand why the Bureau would not have gone and given a defensive briefing.
These defensive briefings, they're just routine. That's Loretta Lynch who said that. You're trying to protect the United States. Donald Trump is a U.S. citizen running for office. If there is Russian interference, he said, I can't fathom why that didn't happen, why there wasn't a defensive briefing. They weren't telling the Trump campaign about any of this. And then when they did, when they started to bring him in on it, January of 2017, they lied. They lied and they said he wasn't a target. They were just checking into the Russians, even as they were spying on Carter Page and Papadopoulos and who knows who else. I don't understand why the Bureau would not have gone and given a defensive briefing. That's the new Attorney General, the highest law enforcement official in the land. And you can be sure that Donald Trump's enemies have been listening to all of these statements. And then you look at the reaction yesterday. You look at the headlines. Something's different. Something has changed. The Wall Street Journal, its editorial board, speaking of Nancy Pelosi and her accusation that he's lied, he can't get away with this. It says here at the Wall Street Journal, the real reason for Mrs. Pelosi's slander, and that's what it is, more slanderous remarks. And the real reason for it is what else Mr. Barr said the last time he was before Congress. He said that spying on a political campaign was a big deal, that he thought the FBI did spy on the Trump campaign in 2016, and that he intends to find out what happened and why. This is why they're panicking. This is why they're hurling mud at not just Donald Trump. It's hard to believe they could possibly hate someone more than Donald Trump. But you've got William Barr up there now at the top of the list. He's public enemy number one, the way the Democrats and the media view it. And that's because he believes spying is a big deal. And he wants to get to the bottom of this. It says Democrats want to intimidate him to drop this or discredit him before he can release his findings. They're very nervous. This is why their heads are exploding. Ted Lieu sees them as dangerous. And given what these people have been doing, he does represent a grave danger to their objectives. It says here the FBI's former deputy director, Andrew McCabe, and former counsel, James Baker, are under criminal investigation. The former for lying to federal investigators and the latter for leaks to the press. Meanwhile, U.S. Attorney John Huber is investigating the FBI surveillance of former Trump campaign associate Carter Page. Further on, the journal says, in Mr. Barr, America now has an attorney general who isn't crippled by recusal from the most crucial issues involving his department, and says he is determined to get to the truth. This is what Democrats shouting liar are really upset about. See, for the longest time, for almost 2 years, the administration had its hands tied behind their backs because, well, you had the previous AG in there, Jeff Sessions, and he had recused himself. And then you had Rod Rosenstein underneath him, who seems like he kind of wavers back and forth between siding with some of Bob Mueller's arguments and now siding with some of William Barr's arguments, the legal arguments regarding obstruction of justice and things of that nature. But now you've got an AG in there who says, okay, the report's out. There's no collusion. And I've determined that there's no case here whatsoever for obstruction of justice. There's no underlying crime. The president's reaction to this attack on his presidency, it's normal. Who wouldn't react this way? Kim Strassel at Fox, I guess she writes for the Journal as well. She too talks about how this is different. You look at their reaction, the Democrats, you see what the media are saying. Something is changing. It says the only thing uglier than an angry Washington is a fearful Washington, and fear is what's driving this week's blitzkrieg of Attorney General William Barr. Fear is driving it. A lot of powerful people are afraid. A lot of powerful people have quite a lot to lose if Mr. Barr continues with his probe. Mueller's had his time. Mueller had 2 years and found nothing. And it looks as though Mr. Barr is finding out a lot about how all of this got started and then the conduct of these corrupt officials all along the way. Strassel says the attacks on Mr. Barr are first and foremost an effort to force him out to prevent this information from coming to light until Democrats can retake the House in 2020. As a fallback, the coordinated campaign works as a preemptive smear. I think I said House. I meant White House. They have the House now. They've got the majority there, but they want to win back the White House in 2020. She says, as a fallback, the coordinated campaign works as a preemptive smear, diminishing the credibility of his ultimate findings by priming the public to view him as a partisan. So she makes some of the same points that the editorial board made there at the Wall Street Journal. But it says here, that's why Mr. Barr isn't alone in getting slimed. It says Natasha Bertrand at Politico last month penned a hit piece on the respected Mr. Horowitz. He's the inspector general. So they're going after the investigators. In this case, now the investigators are the bad guys. They used to be the good guys. You can't question Bob Mueller's integrity. You cannot question Jim Comey. He was the head of the FBI. That's what they were saying a few months ago. Now there's hit job after hit job. You heard the montage. He should be fired. He should resign. He should be impeached. He should go to jail. We'll hear that in a moment. Now he's public enemy number one. And you can be sure, depending upon what Horowitz finds in his report, he's going to be second on the list. If he finds anything that exposes this lawlessness. It says here, this is Kim Strassel, we have to stop using the criminal justice process as a political weapon. That's quoting Mr. Barr, actually. And then Strassel says, the line didn't get much notice, but that worthy goal increasingly looks to be the reason Mr. Barr accepted this unpleasant job. I played that soundbite for you yesterday. He said, I didn't seek this out. I'm 68 years old. I'm in semi-retirement. And I've already had this job before, back in the early 1990s. But he knows. He knows that the Department of Justice, the FBI, because of that upper echelon, as he said in that previous soundbite, corruption has been reigning supreme throughout the years of Barack Obama. We'll talk about him a little bit more in a second as well. But so she quotes Mr. Barr and she says, he came back to take on this rather unpleasant job. Do you think he likes hearing what he heard yesterday? All over the news, all over the airwaves. He's corrupt, he's evil, he's dangerous. Strassel says stopping this abuse requires understanding how it started. The liberal establishment, including journalists friendly with it, doesn't want that to happen, and so has made it a mission to destroy Mr. Barr. It says the attorney general seems to know what he's up against and remains undeterred. That's the sort of steely will necessary to right the ship at the Justice Department and the FBI. He's as I said yesterday, he's the new sheriff. Something has changed. It's been pretty dramatic. Again, go back to some of the things my father said about how Donald Trump got into office in the first place. God's hand in those events back in 2016 and 17. And then now look back at the last few months. The midterm elections. As bad as that was for the Trump administration, at least with the House. But they held on in the Senate. And that came into play with some of these confirmations, not just for the judges, the Supreme Court, I mean, Brett Kavanaugh. But another confirmation earlier this year, just a couple months ago. Here comes William Barr. There's a lot at stake. A lot of Obama officials that are worried right now. William Jacobson said at his blog it also could reach deep into the media with the involvement of Fusion GPS and feeding Russian-provided Clinton DNC-paid-for disinformation to the mainstream journalist community. So the stakes, he says, the stakes are huge. The Russian collusion scandal may be a Democrat and media scandal. That's the real scandal here. That's why they're panicked. That's why they're saying things that sound so deranged. Because they know the real scandal is being exposed. Jacobson says people may go to jail for that collusion. This is the real collusion. And if so, they may be the first people to go to jail over Russian collusion involving the 2016 election. People in the Democrat media complex, he says. Barr is the single greatest threat to the Democrat media Russia collusion complex. That's why Democrats, with help from the mainstream media, will spare no effort to tarnish Barr as a way of discrediting the investigative train that is rolling down the tracks. They will spare no effort. Yesterday was just a beginning. Their aim is to destroy him, or at the very least to discredit him, so that when the findings do finally surface, they can hopefully, again, focus on the messenger or focus on the investigator instead of the facts, instead of the truth. There's a lot at stake, and as he said, it could also reach deep into the media. How revealing to see some of these strong statements from politicians and then the journalists actually advancing it further. Should he resign? Should he resign? Listen to Nancy Pelosi. Part of this was in the montage. She comes out. This is the big headline yesterday. He lied to Congress. He shouldn't be able to get away with that, like John Brennan and James Clapper. Well, she didn't bring that into it. But he lied. He lied to Congress, she said. Another smear job. Listen, though. Listen to the end of this clip and how the reporters react to her statement. This is clip two.
He lied to Congress. If anybody else did that, it would be considered a crime. Nobody is above the law, not the President of the United States and not the Attorney General. Being the Attorney General does not give you a bath to go say whatever you want, and it is the fact because you are the Attorney General.
Should he go to jail for it?
She asked it twice, just like that other reporter. Should he resign? Should he go to jail? William Barr, the way these demented reporters think, William Barr is the one who should go to jail. Should he go to jail? Wolf Blitzer asked it on national TV. CNN yesterday. Listen to this setup. I should say that Nancy Pelosi, she didn't even take that and run with it. I think she was a little bit taken aback by it. Well, he lied. He did lie before Congress. She thinks anyway. But she didn't answer that reporter's question by saying, yes, he actually should go to jail. And the individual that answered Wolf Blitzer, it's actually not part of this clip, even he said, no, we're not exactly saying that. These are the media, the journalists and the media that are taking this and advancing it to the point of jail time, just like they've been doing for the last 2 years about anyone and everyone associated with Donald Trump. Listen to this softball setup from Wolf Blitzer yesterday, clip 3.
If Nadler moves forward and your leadership moves forward with contempt and they still refuse to comply, what do you do next? How do you get this thing moving? Do you oppose fines? Do you suggest maybe even, as some have said, jail time for the Attorney General of the United States?
Jail time for the Attorney General of the United States. When did you ever hear this? When have you ever heard this? Certainly not in the last 8 years before Donald Trump came along. Jail time for the Attorney General. He's public enemy number one. You talk about the talking points that the Democrat, they all came out of their conference. He lied. He lied to Congress. So he needs to step down. He needs to be impeached. And then the media, they all come out of their conferences and say, oh, well, the Democrats are saying he lied. He needs to go to jail. He needs to go to jail. This was over at MSNBC. Listen to Nicole Wallace talking about just how easy it is for Donald Trump and now William Barr to tell lies. They lie all the time. Clip 4.
There's no one more similar to Trump than William Barr in terms of his absolute ease with which he lies, his absolute faith in sort of the Trump delusions that he was spied on.
The faith in the delusions like he was spied on. She said that yesterday, the same day the New York Times revealed that there were multiple spies, not just one, multiple spies who are spying on the Trump campaign. That's the big revelation last night. Talking about this conversation that Papadopoulos had with Stephen Halpert right here in the UK, in London, the West End. And there was an assistant, and this has been covered before. This gal, her name's later on in Azra Turk, Halpert was an informant. He was trying to get some dirt on Papadopoulos. It was a setup. And he's informing the CIA, the FBI. Well, as part of these meetings that they had in London, he introduced this Azra Turk as his assistant. And I think Papadopoulos, in his book, he wrote about how that he thought she was a Turkish spy or some spy from the Middle East. And the New York Times revealed yesterday that, no, actually, she was an FBI agent. She was working undercover. She was working alongside Halpert. So there were two spies in just this one case. It says the woman set up, this is from the New York Times yesterday, the woman had set up a meeting to discuss foreign policy issues, but she was actually a government investigator posing as a research assistant. This is the headline. FBI sent investigator posing as assistant to meet with Trump aide in 2016. Here again, the rules that apply is that if you're a Democrat or you're in the media, you can talk about spying all you want. You can talk about wiretapping all you want. But if you're on the other side, don't you dare accuse us of spying on the Trump campaign. Don't you dare accuse the FBI of spying. They don't do that. That's how they're arguing. It says the American government's affiliation with the woman, who said her name was Azra Turk, is one previously unreported detail of an operation that has become a political flashpoint in the face of accusations by President Trump. And it's all about politics. Well, yes, the Trump people, they're going to take this and run with it. We do acknowledge that, the New York Times says. But the bigger question here is, why is this coming out now? Here's another leak. Why is it being leaked now? Why is the New York Times reporting on it now? Because they're trying to get out in front of William Barr and Inspector General Horowitz. They know these things are about to be revealed. And we've already seen with Barr's four-page summary that they hate it when they can't get out and establish the narrative first. So here come the leaks, and you can expect more of them. The plan, the strategy here, is to destroy the reputation, to discredit the reputation of Barr and Horowitz. And then at the same time, this never-ending series of leaks. Oh, now there's another spy. Okay. It says the decision to use Miss Turk in the operation aimed at a presidential campaign. What did Comey say to Donald Trump in January 2017? Don't worry, Mr. Trump. None of this is about you. You're not being investigated. And then Donald Trump saying, well, can you at least tell the American people? My presidency is at stake here. Comey wouldn't do it. He was lying. He was just there trying to create the news hook. So CNN with Jim Sciutto, the former Obama official, so that he could run with the story. And run they did. Sciutto had help from Tapper and all the others. Clapper was informing them. They were all in bed together. Here's the New York Times just yesterday, talking about the investigation into the Trump campaign, spying on the Trump campaign. It says Ms. Turk went to London to help oversee the politically sensitive operation, working alongside a longtime informant, Stephen Halper. It said that the FBI wanted to send her over there because she was a trained investigator. Papadopoulos says that she all but offered sex in return for secrets. And he discerned it. Something's not right here. It says the London operation yielded no fruitful information. Listen to that. That's in the New York Times. The London operation. It yielded no fruitful information. No collusion. They knew it back then. They were just trying to set him up. Papadopoulos, keep in mind, he went to jail later. He went to jail because of all of this nonsense, because of all of this lawlessness. It says the London operation yielded no fruitful information, but FBI officials have called the Bureau's activities in the months before the election both legal and carefully considered under extraordinary circumstances. Listen to this. Here again, they're trying to get out front. Out in front of the investigations, they are now under scrutiny as part of an investigation by Michael Horowitz, the Justice Department Inspector General. This is the New York Times arguing on behalf of the Obama officials, you see. This is the New York Times arguing in favor of Comey and McCabe and Brennan and Clapper. Look, we did do this. We did spy. There were multiple spies, but you have to understand, all of these decisions were carefully considered. Carefully considered and also very legal, very lawful and legal. It says Mr. Barr reignited the controversy last month. This is a little further on, saying, I think spying on a political campaign is a big deal. See these two. They're clashing. On the one side, you can't do that. That's illegal. That's an abuse of power. And the other side saying, these were extraordinary circumstances, and it was carefully considered and all legal. We had to do it. It didn't turn up anything. There was no fruitful information, but we had to do it. It's very serious. Well, let me get a little further on. It says, as part of Mr. Horowitz's investigation, his office has examined Mr. Halper's past work as an FBI informant and asked witnesses about whether agents in adequate control of Mr. Halper's activities, people familiar with the inquiry, have said. So some that are familiar with what Horowitz is looking into, they're leaking this information. It says, weeks before Papadopoulos met with Mr. Turk and Mr. Halper, the FBI had opened its investigation into the Russian effort based largely on information that Mr. Papadopoulos had relayed to an Australian diplomat about a Russian offer to help the Trump campaign by releasing thousands of hacked Democratic emails. Now, there's, just as an aside, there is more to this story. And even if you listen to Bill Barr, if you listen to him talking about, well, some have said that it was this and this that triggered it, and some have said it was July 31st when it all started. I'm looking into that. Which means he's not so sure it's what everyone thinks about it, or what it even says in the Mueller report. It says here, secrecy was paramount for the FBI officials because of the sensitiveness of the investigative campaign. So look, we were very secretive because we didn't want to hurt the Trump campaign. That's their position. And the New York Times is there to try to help them. That's why the leak. It says, the FBI instructed Mr. Halper to set up a meeting in London with Mr. Papadopoulos, but gave him few details about the broader investigation. Listen to this. The FBI instructed Mr. Halper. He's an informant. He's a spy working for the FBI. And then the FBI sent this girl over there, Azra Turk. She's another FBI. She's trained. She's highly trained and skilled. Halpert's just an informant. So they needed to call in reinforcements to go after George Papadopoulos. Well, it talks about the connection to Australia and then how the investigation got started. Further on, it says the FBI also decided to send Ms. Turk to take part in the operation, people familiar with it said, and to pose as Mr. Halpert's assistant. That's the headline for this New York Times piece. FBI sent investigator posing as assistant to meet with Trump aide in 2016. It says, for the FBI, placing such a sensitive undertaking in the hands of a trusted government investigator was essential. British intelligence officials, here's another whopper, listen to this. British intelligence officials were also notified about the operation. The people familiar with the operation said, but it was unclear whether they, that would be the British, it was unclear whether they provided assistance. Now, Donald Trump, just last week, he tweeted out that the British were helping with gathering intelligence on his campaign. This is something that the Brits have strongly denied. And then when he tweeted that out last week, oh, the firestorm of rebuke that came from his critics. Here he goes again with his conspiracy theories. Just yesterday, the New York Times reveals that they were notified, British intelligence officials were notified, and were not yet clear about whether they provided assistance. What do you suppose we hear in another week or two or 3 weeks down the line? When all of a sudden, well, yeah, it is clear, actually. They did provide some assistance. But look, you have to understand, this was all completely legal. These were extraordinary times, 2016. Everything was done just by the book. Molly Hemingway, going back to that reporter, Nicole Wallace, she talked about the delusion of Trump supporters that would say there was spying going on. I love Molly Hemingway's tweet yesterday. She said, for not spying on the Trump campaign, there sure was a lot of spying on the Trump campaign. Yes, indeed. And now these big reveals, like in the New York Times, because they want to get out in front of these investigations. Speaking of George Papadopoulos, and this revelation about British involvement. Listen to what he said last night on Fox News, clip 5.
I don't think President Trump was tweeting about UK interference out of the blue for no reason last week. Because let me explain why. The day I met with Stefan Halper and Azra Turk in London, I was invited by the British Ministry of Foreign Affairs to meet with them at their offices, including with Tobias Elwood, who was the number two at the time under Boris Johnson. So clearly, when the New York Times suggested in their reporting today that the British were told of this operation, I believe the British actually were actively spying on me as well. And I think part of what President Trump was tweeting last week about the British spying was about this involvement in this operation in London. So I guess we have a lot more to find out.
We do have a lot more to find out. And going back to President Trump's tweet from last week, he said, when the truth does come out, when it does come out, it will be a beauty. It's going to be a beauty. Wow, he said in capitals. The British too. How far-reaching this investigation was. The New York Times, in that report yesterday, the day after meeting Ms. Turk, Papadopoulos met briefly with Mr. Halper at the private London club and so on. The two men agreed to meet again. During that conversation, Mr. Halper immediately asked about hacked emails and whether Russia was helping the campaign, according to Mr. Papadopoulos' book. Angry over the accusatory questions, Papadopoulos ended the meeting. The FBI failed to glean any information of value from the encounters, plural. They failed to glean any information of value from the encounters, but the Mueller team sent that man to jail. The Mueller team sent Papadopoulos to jail for 11, 12 days, I think it was, for a process crime. That was going on just a couple years ago, and now it's being exposed. Which is why you see the Democrats and their friends in the media saying things like what they're saying all day yesterday. It says, finally, at the end of this article, at the urging of Mr. Page, he met another campaign aide, this Halper guy. He was connected to Page. He first met Carter Page, and I think it was July 11th, 2016. And, of course, the storyline that we know now is the investigation didn't start until July 31st. That's what the Mueller report says. Well, we'll see what William Barr turns up, as Papadopoulos said in that clip I just played. We have a lot more to find out. When we come back, it looks like, judging by the clock, we'll have to hurry through the last part of 1 Timothy 4. But we'll still be able to get through some important verses there. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical. But world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Oh, many years ago, I think it was probably when I was about Sam's age, I loved reading through these last few verses of 1 Timothy 4, the Apostle Paul here writing to his young assistant and telling him to really bear down on his studies, on his conduct, on serving the brethren. Let no man despise your youth. He told a young Timothy, I'm not as young as I used to be when I loved this passage so much. I still love it, though. It's still wonderful instruction, so wise. A wise and discerning and loving admonition. The Apostle Paul telling Timothy, look, just focus on these things, and the brethren will really look to you and support you and help you. Verse 6, it says, if you put, this is 1 Timothy 4, if you put the brethren in remembrance of these things, you shall be a good minister of Jesus Christ. Never mind how young you might be. Just be a good minister. Serve Christ. Be a good minister of Jesus Christ. Nourished up, it says, in the words of faith and good doctrine, whereunto you have attained. We do need nourishment. Young people, old people, families, children, parents, we need nourishment. We need to be equipped with the truth of God. We've talked so much about that theme this past week because the truth is cast to the ground. We're seeing it in spiritual Israel. We see it in physical Israel. He talks in verse 8 about bodily exercise and how that profits for a short time. And of course, spiritual exercise. There's a permanent reward with that, but both are good, both are needed. Verse 11 says, these things command and teach. Command and teach. You, even as a young minister, you do have some authority in the church. And so speak with boldness. Speak with authority. Base your messages on the sure word of Bible prophecy, on that holy and inspired word. Verse 12 says, let no man despise your youth, but be you an example of the believers in word, in conversation or conduct, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Don't let anyone think less of you just because of your youth. Just be an example. Just set the right example. Be a pattern that the others in the church can look to in your speech, the way you talk, in your conduct, in your love, in your faith, in your purity. Timothy was probably in his early 30s by this point. He started working with Paul as a 18, 19-year-old perhaps. And here he was as still a relatively young minister. And Paul telling him, be an example in your conduct. Set the right example for the others in the church. Verse 13 says, till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Pay attention to your studies. Until I get there, give attendance to reading, exhortation, and doctrine. Put a priority on these three. He says further, neglect not the gift that is in you, which was given you by prophecy with the laying on of hands of the ministry. Timothy had a gift for speaking. He was a wonderful teacher. Don't neglect this spiritual gift. Keep working at it. Study, give attendance to reading, exhortation, and doctrine, and then speak the truth. He says this in 2 Timothy, preach the word. These are the instructions Paul was giving him right at the end of his life. Study, and then don't neglect this gift. Get out there and to then paraphrase 2 Timothy 4, preach the word. Preach it. He uses the word command in verse 11. As I say, there's authority. There's authority that backs a godly minister, a minister of Christ. Verse 15, meditate upon these things. Give yourself wholly to them that your profiting may appear to all. Practice and cultivate and meditate upon these things, Moffat says. Just throw yourself into it. Be wholehearted in your service to God. Give everything you can to this work, this life-saving work, this work filled with hope. He says in verse 16, finally, take heed unto yourself, Timothy. Take heed to yourself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them. For in doing this, you shall both save yourself and them that hear you. A strong warning, a personal warning for him, an individual warning, but one for the brethren too. He says first to Timothy, take heed to yourself and unto the doctrine. Continue in the doctrine. Don't veer off course. Don't veer away from the truth. Stay grounded in the truth. Make the truth your pillar, your foundation. that immovable foundation. Continue in it, it says. For in doing this, you'll save yourself, and you'll save those that hear you. God really does warn the ministry, first and foremost, the ones in the lead positions. That's why what you see happening at the upper echelon of government these days, that's why it's so despicable and evil, because of how many people below that it deceives. Take heed to yourself. If you do, then you'll save yourself and those that hear you. The example, the preaching of Timothy can actually save people. That's what Paul was saying to him. Watch yourself and then teach the brethren. What a lesson for a young minister. What a lesson for any individual in a position of responsibility. Watch yourself. Keep yourself in check. And then really get out there and preach the word. Teach. Teach this truth to others. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on yet another week of broadcasting here at KPCG. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.